House Bill 100. Okay, Danny, do we have the amendments, the three amendments?
Check the road. Space there.
Monkey. I've got one here, Danny. I've got one here.
Do we have the three important ones?
Must be housekeeping, eh?
They don't have them. I've only got one.
We're passing out,
Williams.
Then there was two.
I believe that we're passing them around.
Hold yours for a minute.
Number 16. Number 16.
And then have a full.
We'll reconvene the meeting of the House Finance Committee. It's 3:30. We have a presence still, Representative Davis, Williams, Foster, Co-Chair Cario, myself, Mulder, Bundy, Coring, Osterman, Gusendorf, and...
Katarina's here.
I just saw Representative Davis. He must have slept out. Okay, we have three amendments, actually four, 16, 17, 18, and 19, to the supplemental bill. The First Amendment is mine. It relates, these are issues, as we left it yesterday, we had a number of small issues that we were going to try and rectify with the administration, glaring problems that they saw. Having met with Barb and the Public Defender's Office, and the interpretation that we had received in relation to the $70,000 of office modifications or remodeling was, in fact, an opportunity to save money in the long term. As they were needing additional room, there was space available in their building that came open, and if they didn't move quickly to capture it, they were going to have to pursue office space in another location and additional overhead beyond that. So it was a pretty justifiable expense in my mind. So thus, I would offer amendment number 16, where we would increase the amount of authorization to the public defender from $227,000 to $297,000. It would offer it at this time. Is there any objection to amendment number 16? Representative Davis.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to object, of course, but I appreciate the amendment being put forward, and I certainly appreciate the explanation that Ms. Brink brought forward. It's an opportune time, and would be foolish not to offer the opportunity to extend the office space.
Is there any further objection to amendment number 16?
Yes.
Hearing none, amendment number 16 is adopted. That brings the number amendment number 17, Representative Williams.
I move amendment number 17. Yesterday we discussed this, and in my discussion with the department, it was different when we came here to the committee room. Finding out where the monies are and how it's going to be used, the department and I talked and agreed that the $70,000 should be added instead of the $100,000. There is need for this to be done now. I think it's important that we cover the department today.
Representative Terrio.
Representative Williams, where is the program receipts? What generates the program receipts? Is it paid by utility companies?
I might have, yes, it might have a department answer, but that's where it comes from.
Whoever would like to. Who had to cut the short straw?
Chairman Mother.
Yes, Representative Osterman.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I got it. Thanks.
Do you find this location?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Darren Spencer from OMB. I asked Nancy that question just before the meeting started, and she said the answer is yes, it does come from the utility companies.
From the utility companies?
Yes.
So, and the department is in agreement with the
Chairman, Senate. That's correct. I think what we had was, you know, we get speaking sometimes, and the definition of what we're talking about depends on the user, and so I think we had a little miscommunication. That's all been taken care of. We do support the amendment.
All right. Is there an objection to Amendment Number 17? Hearing none, Amendment Number 17 is adopted. Amendment 18, Representative Bundy.
I'll withdraw that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Amendment Number 19, Representative Bundy.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Amendment Number 19, and I'd ask that Ginger join us answer some of the details that perhaps I haven't, because she's been involved in negotiations with the Region 10 auditor in discussion as to whether this is an appropriate use of federal receipts as federal indirect funds. And you have an explanation there in front of you indicating that it is appropriate as long as it's made by an appropriation and the legislature identifies the source of the funds. There's another small portion of this where Department of Administration Technology Group reevaluated their charges, and they're not going to charge back CSED as much as they had anticipated, and that will also make a reduction of $27,811 for a total reduction of $430,300. And I would like to do add backs like you all, but I couldn't find one.
Thank goodness, Representative Bundy. We needed to show a few more decrements to offset some of these ads that we've made. Are there any questions for Representative Bundy on Amendment Number 19?
Actually, there's...
I think Ginger with us.
Ginger?
I'm Ginger Blaisdell with Legislative Finance, and there's actually a new Number 19. This has gone through some very rapid changes here. What I did not reflect on the First Amendment 19 is that the general fund portion of 880 that's being requested... on the one that you just were looking at was reduced to $421,889. And what didn't show on this is that the federal receipts need to be shown. So on the new 19, you'll see that the request for the supplemental would be $421,889 in general funds and $430,300 in federal receipts. So the total supplemental for Child Support Enforcement Division would be $852,189.
All right. And a total net reduction, as I added up, Ginger, on the GF savings would be $458,111.
GF savings, yes.
Right. All right. Do you want to withdraw?
Mr. Chairman, if I might withdraw Amendment Number 19 and move new Amendment Number 19.
Would you rather call it Number 20? Okay.
Replacement Amendment Number 19.
Okay. Is there an objection to withdrawing old Amendment Number 19? Hearing none. Representative Bundy?
Move the replacement or new Amendment Number 19.
All right. Is there any objection or any further discussion on new Amendment Number 19? Representative Davies?
Yeah, I just wonder if we get some discussion from Dan on
this. Mr. Chairman, Dan Spencer from OMB again. Before this amendment was offered, we had a quick conversation with Ginger, and she's talked to federal auditors, and we've not been involved in that, but I'll take her word for it. She's proved reliable in the past. I just want to be on the record, though, to make clear that the committee understands the timing of the receipt. As I understand it, this money, we will not know for certain, this is a projection, and we will not know for certain the amount of receipts that we'll get until after June 30th. So in other words, we're going to assume that the funds come in at this level. If they do not come in at this level, we will show an over expenditure in CSED, and we will be back here for ratification next year. So just want to make sure that everyone understands that. I have no idea, you know, if we were short, how much we would be short, presumably not a whole heck of a lot, but still there is that possibility, and I know that the legislature is customarily sensitive to that kind of an issue, so I simply wanted to make sure that everyone understood that.
I appreciate you put that on the record, Dan. I think we have a similar situation in relation to the Southeast disaster here with the road money and with federal receipts there. Are there any further questions of Dan or Ginger in relation to new Amendment Number 19?
Mr. Chairman, just
Representative
quick question on the recalculation for the
admin chargeback. What's behind that?
Mr. Chairman, what the no sooner do I tell the Department of Administration that it's safe to leave than a question comes up.
Is she still here?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Basically, what happened was the Department of Administration, as you know, sets their rates about 16 months in advance of the fiscal year in the budgeting process. And they implemented a new version of CICS, the mainframe computer system software, and it became obvious that their usage projections and their what they expected the CICS to use were out of whack. And so they've done a rate adjustment based on where it actually what costs they actually think they have to recover for CICS from the agencies. And that's where this came. So for example, that one of the questions that's come up was you know, would the recorder's office have any of this? And the answer is probably virtually none, because it very much depends on which particular applications you use. So this estimated reduction to computer services charges is as a result of DOA's reevaluation of are they going to be over-recovering? And they don't want to over-recover from the departments, so there has been a rate adjustment. This is not the full amount because of the issue of the, you know, CSED has a match. We put in X amount of general funds. There are X amount of federal funds come in. Frankly, CSED would rather not have the funding go away because there are a whole bunch of other issues that they could use to address with this. You know, some federal reports on simply being in compliance with their existing systems. But I think, we'll let it rest there.
Is there any further discussion on new amendment number 19? Hearing none, amendment number 19 is adopted.
The way that was going, I was hoping we'd delay one more and we'd get new figures in, but
new people from Ledge Finance. Representative Kusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we rescind our failure to adopt amendment number 5, power cost equalization.
Okay. There is a motion if members would like to go back into the packet for amendment number 5. Was PCE. There is a motion before us to rescind our action in failing to adopt amendment number 5. Hearing objection, Representative Grusendorf.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. there was a lot of discussion on this amendment yesterday and a lot of time to think about it. I'll be very brief. In the arguments that we had of why we shouldn't fund it, it seemed to be concerned about how the Department of Community and Regional Affairs administered it. That grievance, of course, is something that each member can look at in different ways, but my concern is the consequences of what did happen, that it wasn't prorated, and we have people out in rural areas that receive power cost equalization that are now looking at a 43% or a considerable drop. In other words, it would be 43% support of it. And seeing what is happening in relation with the supplemental, not only on this side but on the other side, I see no reason why we, as members of this body, should be classified as the bad guys, hopefully for a positive conclusion on this. So I think it would be in our best interest to put it into our supplemental bill, get it over there, and there'd be one less thing that we'd have to worry about. And we then have happy people in the rural areas.
Representative Bundy?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be tempted to vote for this if I thought it'd make everybody in rural Alaska happy, but I'm afraid that it'll take more than power cost equalization. And I'm going to support the continued reduction because I think it is time that we go to the greater question as to will power cost equalization continue, and how will it be, if it does continue, how will it be financed?
Representative Davies.
Very briefly, just to say that I think that the reason why we should not make the change now, but later on when we figure out how we're going to do the whole program, is that we have for several years funded it at the 85% level. And I think that there was a reasonable expectation in May when we passed the budget that it would continue to be funded at that level, and that that there was a blue ribbon panel out there that we were at the end of this, there's enough money in the power cost equalization program to cover this request that we have in front of us, and that there was an expectation that at that time we would figure out what changes could be made in the program. To force the changes before we've had the discussion seems premature to me, and argue a reasonable expectation on the part of the people and part of the program that it would continue at that 85% level during this fiscal year. So for those reasons, I think that we should allow the fund to pay the increment to keep it at the 85% level, and then to have the discussion, you know, about how much we should change it, if any, and have those things in the context of the whole package.
Is there any further discussion, Representative Osterman?
I have the concern that Representative Grishendorf spoke about before, why the department didn't prorate it. The budget was passed with only $17 million. They knew in the 1st of July in 1999 that they had $17 million to spend. I have a hard time with the department and the fact that they didn't prorate it out and they didn't come back. Now they come back because they want $1.4 million to be drawn out and to be used. That $1.4 will not be available next year if we do it now. And I think the department has to stand up to some of this and be there. I just can't I can't condone what the department's doing.
Representative Davies?
You know, that was exactly the situation the department had in the last couple of years, that it was clear that the amount of money in the fund was declining. There wasn't going to be enough to continue it for very many years in the future, and yet that was the way we dealt with it in the previous couple of years. As we came back at the end, we put a supplemental in to keep it at that 85% level. I think the department was acting this year exactly the same they acted in the previous couple of years.
Chairman. Representative Osterman?
All my information that I looked at showed that last year it was at 18 something. This year it's funded at 17. So are you saying?
I think that the expectation was the 85% level.
Representative Grisendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, when we sit here dealing with the supplemental, sometimes we're forced to look at why certain things happened. And the rationale, of course, was very clear when we start talking about certain roads that were going to be closed and the snow was going to be removed off from it, that the people had an expectation that those highways would be open so that they could proceed on with the commerce that they wanted to do at the normal time. They were caught by surprise. Not saying this is a good comparison, because I think power cost equalization is a little bit more important and perhaps a little bit more desperate need as to the snow removal. We had an amendment that was adopted just shortly there. I believe it was the public defender, where authorization in regards to space or being able to utilize and save some money and do that. And we did that because that makes sense. I'm indicating here that the same sort of thing has happened, that there's a level of expectation that occurred out there in these rural communities and the individual customer, let alone all the compound, things that were very complicated in the economy and weather, that we should just simply step up and say, we don't like it, but here it is, and we're going to insist on some other arrangement, because we're not punishing community and regional affairs by denying this. We are actually striking at the pocketbooks of the individual out there that expected to get some of this assistance. And that's, when you calculate out the remaining time, that's quite a chunk of change out of that economy out in those regions. That's a lot of money.
Is there any further discussion on the motion to rescind our action in failing to adopt amendment number 5? Representative Moses?
Yeah, one thing that gives me concern is where we don't fully fund the PCE on a continuing basis, because we can't take the attitude in some areas where we have acquired inexpensive power using the natural resources of the state, whether it be natural gas or water or whatever. Those areas that there's been millions or hundreds of millions of dollars spent on hydroelectric power, like Snowsham, Bradley Lake, Susitna, and so on and so forth. Any taxpayers' dollars have been spent to get inexpensive power in those areas. And I don't think those areas can take the attitude that we got what we want, now heck with everybody else. I think we're going to have a program, ongoing program, to get inexpensive power through geothermal or hydro, or wind turbines, whatever. And that both have to have not only a fund for an ongoing program to get the inexpensive energy in those areas that don't have it, but also fund PCE in full funding in the meantime until we can get there. Unalaska has a geothermal potential to supply our whole district, but we can't afford to put in the transmission lines to, we can't even support the project for Unalaska because there's not enough consumption. And we're different than other states. Other states, if you build a Hoover Dam, you have the transmission lines in place to transmit that power. In Alaska, we don't have that privilege. We're too vast of a territory to transmit that power. But we have to realize we have this problem. And we can't just ignore the fact that some got what they need, to the heck with the rest.
Representative Corey?
All you. No, I appreciate your comments, Representative Moses. And I reluctantly voted no the last time around. It's going to be a struggle for me to vote no again because I recognize, even though I will vote no, that's my expectation, but I wanted to explain. I recognize that there's really a need in rural Alaska to help with the power generation needs, but my frustration is that it doesn't seem like we're moving in a direction of putting together any kind of a long-term sustainable plan where it would not only fund PCE, but it would fund the infrastructure-related development, power generation systems and transmission lines, things of that nature. So my hope here is that if we deny these dollars, that perhaps it would give certain folks, including the administration, the incentive to be creative and come up with some ideas other than just simply applying a surcharge to ratepayers in urban Alaska. But I really feel for folks in rural Alaska, and I want to help, and I've got my plan. I know the funding source is subject to controversy, but at least it's a plan, and it's something that we can discuss, and if we can get other plans on the table and put together a long-term sustainable endowment or some kind of fund to meet the long-term needs, that would be great.
And wrap up, Representative Davis.
Just a quick response to that. I think we do need a plan, and that's what I'm saying. And but what we're talking about now is supplemental money to get through the end of this fiscal year. I mean, no matter what kind of new technology or whatever you might be talking about, it certainly isn't going to come online in the next month. And just to say that I think that we have been working toward those things. We passed the methane bill a couple of years ago. The Department of Natural Resources is doing extensive research on that. They're working hard on identifying where those resources can be. I think that to expect that they're going to solve it at more than a handful of villages is probably wishful thinking, but at least it will solve it in a few places, and so we need to look at that. We are working right now as we speak on some wind power situations, so we are working on that. Just the basic diesel technology we've worked on in the last 10 years, that is twice as efficient now as it was 10 years ago. Twice as efficient in terms of the amount of power that's produced given the number of gallons of diesel fuel going in. So there have been significant efforts gone into trying to make that more efficient, and we'll continue to work on that. But that's exactly what I'm asking for as a plan. And not to just jerk people around suddenly and say, well, sorry, we had a particularly cold winter, so we're going to, pull the subsidy down from 85 to 43% for the last 2 months. I don't think that's in the nature of a plan. There is the money in the power cost equalization fund to cover this. I think we ought to use it.
Representative Ostrich.
I think it's misleading to say that because it's been a cold winter that we're going to pull down and not pay from 85 down to 43% of the funds. The decision was made back in July or last summer when they knew when they had $17 million to spend. This is not an issue of whether it was a bit of cold winter. This is an issue of how they allocate their funds, and I think it's wrong.
Is there a further discussion? Hearing none. Shar, let's call the roll, please. On the motion to rescind our action in failing to adopt number 5.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Davies?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yes.
Representative Coring?
No.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Yes.
Representative Osterman?
No.
Representative Terrio?
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
5-6.
Motion fails. Are there any other amendments to come before us? Representative Moses?
I'd like to move that we rescind our action on amendment number 8.
Amendment number 8. Let me guess. Fisheries disaster.
Who are all these guys?
This is always the danger of holding a bill over a second day. Representative Moses is a move that we rescind our action in failing to adopt amendment number 8. There is objection, Representative Moses. You may speak to your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday I heard it mentioned by one of the members that this was unnecessary, or this was just the result of a cyclical nature of the industry. I'd like to correct that a little bit. This area is actually not just a double whammy. I consider it a quadruple whammy. It's both an economic disaster and a natural disaster. Number one, they first had the problem with prices on the farm fish. Next came along the economy of the Orient. The failure over there affected their salmon prices terribly. That's the economic disaster. Then they have two disastrous years where even to this day, the biologists and scientists don't know what happened. Their return on their runs were less than half of what they were predicted. The smoke migrated out to sea, and they did not return. There's some natural disaster out to sea that happened that they haven't been able to determine. And this area is hurting terribly. The local governments up there are down to one-third of what their revenues were 4 years ago because of the economic situation, tax returns, and the lack of the actual fish returns. But it's not a very good situation. The longer we prolong this, the worse the agony is. And I don't think it's fair. I think that money is needed now, and the sooner they can get it, the sooner they get their projects done and help out the economy. Up there, you don't just order supplies 1 week and get them the next week. It's a month or more away. And if you don't get them on that first boat, you actually lose the whole season. And then you have to wait till the next year because they get up too late for the construction season. All these things are the reason why we should do this now and help out the economy, which is in a bad shape. And this doesn't only affect Bristol Bay. Please believe me, it affects Anchorage, affects the whole state. The disaster up there affected our community, our economy in Unalaska considerably. Our longshore in Unalaska was 50% of what it should have been because all the frozen salmon in Bristol Bay come through there. Unalaska is the hub for all the frozen salmon going to the Orient. There's no fish in Bristol Bay that longshoremen don't get any work. And that's a major portion of our economy in the summertime. Therefore, I requested we plead with you to rescind our action on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Moses. And I'm, you know, I hate to have it characterized that we're turning a blind eye on it because we certainly aren't. The intention that I put forward, and I'll restate again, is that by denying it in the supplemental, it's not that we're not going to do it, but it's that I think it's a great capital matching grant program. We get about 6 to 1 federal dollars for state dollars, and they're going to construct capital projects in those local communities and provide jobs and economy. But as a supplemental for emergency disaster, it's stretching it to say that it's you know, providing direct relief to people as much as it is providing community improvement projects. And as such, last year I know they talked about it. I found out again apparently that they talked about putting in the capital matching grant program. They didn't do it, but I think they should have. And I think that's the approach that I'm going to take this year, Representative Moses, where I'll put it into, or recommend that we put it into the capital matching grant program so that these dollars are available to be matched and receive the federal dollars. I think it's the appropriate place for that action to actually occur in the capital budget. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. I mean, it's obvious. Yesterday you read off the projects that, or day before, I can't remember when, the projects that are to be built under this funding scenario. Last year we proposed similar options of, instead of GF, how can we find municipal local matches. That didn't work out. We're following the same scheme we did last year and trying to find those areas that are benefiting to come up with the match dollars. We're doing that again this year. But in addition to that, I mean, a disaster area. Last year we talked about the opportunity of providing grants to these people to let them pay some of their loans, and that would have been nice if that could have been passed and put forward. But again, at the same time, I asked myself, what if they have another fishing break disaster the next year, which they did? They would have been further in debt because they wouldn't have been able to pay off the loan that we had offered them the previous year. And now, again, we see these projects that they're proposing to build with this money. Those things are going to take maintenance and upkeep. There's an additional expense should disaster, a third disaster in a row, follow. So anytime you look at capital projects, you have to look a bit down the line. I mean, it's happened before. I think in the state when there was lots of money, we built a lot of things that now local municipalities have to pay for the operating and maintenance costs of. So there's, you know, it's not all on the plus side. Some of these capital projects are going to require additional local dollars in the future.
Any further discussion? Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the last major disaster that I sat here and had to deal with was the Miller Reach fire. And, of course, the economy in that area there is much more resilient than the economy that we're talking about now and trying to address in the supplemental. And there was other, you know, abilities to get funds and actually a good tax base to work with. And none of us batted an eye when we went through that, and I think we were very generous, and we met that disaster. And yet, we're not coming up and assisting. It's a whole new program that the federal government has set up, where I believe we're the first ones to enter into such a program. And we have to be sure that we're not creating problems for these small little communities that, with their match money that they get from the state, aren't forced to direct it into the projects that they as a community have decided that they want to do. I don't know if in your thoughts you're talking about basically obligating their money that they would have for match from the state to do this. And if that's the case, then that's wrong. We have never asked anybody else to do that. Here's an opportunity for us to come in and simply put that money in there, take care of it, and we have done our jobs as overseers, and people are concerned about the economy, concerned about people of the state of Alaska, and we're not doing it with this or power cost equalization. It strikes me as it's really tough to live in the rural areas, apparently.
Representative Davies and then Corey.
Just like to respond to the Miller's Reach fire analogy or comparison. You know, I personally worked on probably 100 house of those houses that were burned up during that fire, so it was a something that I was directly connected to, since the areas in my area there, I'm in construction and a lot of the houses in there I worked on. That's what I was referring to. If my memory serves me, Ben, it was monies that we appropriated that dealt with fire suppression. It didn't have to do with any kind of capital-related appropriations or providing any kind of matching dollars that would in turn allow us to access monies for capital projects. It was almost entirely fire suppression. A lot of the monies that were brought into the community to help people who were burned out, you know, for purchasing food and clothes and things of that nature were privately funded through the Red Cross. And I know the Salvation Army was playing a major role there, and United Way and various churches and so forth. So I just wanted to just note that for the record. And to also note that I voted no on that appropriation. I think I was one of just two or three legislators back in 96. So thank you.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, a couple things on that. One is the, you know, the nature of the, you know, talk about these capital projects. Well, most of them are kind of, many of them are in the nature of repair and renovation projects. They're not all building new things. Some of them are, but in fact, all of them are intended to provide wages to people working on those projects. That's the primary motivation in these things. And it's to provide some help to the families so that they can get through this time when, you know, the fish aren't there and the incomes aren't there. And it's an alternate source of income. That's the primary purpose of these things. And so instead of just giving somebody a check to help them pay their rent or their electricity or something like that, we're saying, look, here's some money and that you get as wages for doing a project in the community. So it's like a win-win deal. It's you get more bang for the buck that way. But the main attribute of this is that we're trying to address the economic part of the disaster that's driven by the natural disaster part of it. And that was the way the Stevens Magnuson Act was structured. It was structured for that reason on purpose. It's not, I mean, this situation isn't a situation. This is different. It is different in the details. And there isn't a fire to put out or buildings to rebuild because of the fire. The problem is that because of the warm ocean waters or whatever else, I don't pretend to really understand what caused it. But the fact is that there, for 2 or 3 years in a row, there were very low fish runs, and that had a devastating effect on the economy. And it's a result of a natural phenomenon change that's causing this. And so in that sense, it is different in its detail, but it's not different in its general overall attribute, which is that we need to put money into this community to help them rebuild, to help them survive. So I just think that we need to do that. The last point I want to make is that we do have the room under our net zero philosophy here to do this. So even if you add this back in, we would still be essentially at the net zero line that our target was. So it's not like we're busting the budget or going somewhere totally irresponsible. I think we can get in under our target even if we put this project in.
With your indulgence, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah,
I was thinking about your suggestion for a plan in the capital budget. But if we pass this supplemental, they definitely will be ready to meet the early part of the construction season and know exactly what they have to work with. It's March, April, you know, they could be ready to go in May. But if we wait and delay this and supposedly do the same thing in the capital budget, then that doesn't come available until, July. If you don't have everything in place by that time, as Representative Moses indicated, with planning and getting equipment things up there, for all practical purposes, you've lost the season. So if your intention, Mr. Chairman, is to do it anyway by a different means, I think it would be more prudent on our part to do it now, so that they truly can start during the month of May, June, and then comes the magic date, July, that would affect. So I think we're talking about 2.5 months that might be available for proper planning and doing the projects properly.
I respect your suggestion, Representative Grusendorf. However, I suspect if we did it now and we gave them their allocations for capital matching grants now, it would come back again as in May with, now we want the other part of our capital matching grant. And I appreciate it's a difficult situation, and I'm just trying to live within the bounds of the budgets as we're being put forward to us now. You know, and I appreciate the difficulty of the timing of this. Like I said, I wish this would have been resolved in this means or mechanism last year, because it could have been much more effective. Frankly, I have an overall difficulty with the concept of an economic disaster. You can look at it in a number of different ways, but I have a sincere question in my mind about how often or how many times are we going to be asked to prop up a failing industry. And I think it's going to continue, and I think it's going to get worse. It's not to say that the runs are always going to be worse, but I think that the commercial fishing industry as a whole is in for a number of rocky years. And it's going to be a very trying time for people in those industries who've lived upon that economy for a long time. And there's going to be a lot of expectations put upon us as a state, or requests put to us. I'm sure we're going to see some of them this session. And I don't think we've resolved how we're going to deal with this problem. And simply declaring one emergency after another, economic emergency after another, I don't think is a prudent means or mechanism to do that. I've got a bigger problem with the bigger picture than I do just providing this as a capital matching grant program. I think this is worthwhile doing just because it's a good return on the investment dollar to provide some community improvements.
No.
Representative Williams, and then Representative Griesendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the people that from that area, if we were to get this into the supplemental this year or right now, and it was to be passed on, and we're talking about fishermen that are hurting, and the material is going to get there in May, June. The fishing starts in May, June. When are these fishermen going to be working on these projects that we have set the money up for? In May or June, while they're fishing? In July? Wouldn't it be a better time if we got it down there towards the end of the summer season to tie in to those projects at that time? I feel for them, but I just, right now, I don't know if logistically you can get all of that material up there in time to help the fishermen work on these projects.
Representative Moses?
Well, that's one of the problems. Actually, this was needed months ago, but it isn't like Juneau or Ketchikan or Anchorage where you have a weekly barge of some sort. I mean, you go for a month and a half without a barge. The first barge generally comes in as soon as the ice is out or shortly thereafter. That's when the supply should be on. Go for another month or so before there's another barge. And if you don't, that all has to be coordinated. And the ideal situation is get it all taken care of now. You wait till the end of the session, which is May 20th, before there's anything definite on it. Why? That's pushing it a little bit late, getting anything done before the fishing season. That's one of the problems.
Is there any further discussion on the motion to rescind our action and failing to adopt Amendment Number 8? Hearing none, Shar, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Davies?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Griesendorf?
Yes.
Representative Coring?
No.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
No.
Representative Osterman?
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
Representative Terrio?
No.
Four, six.
The motion to rescind fails. Are there any further amendments? If we do have an amended spreadsheet before you, and I think it calculates the bottom line, as we refer to it, reflects the addition of the first two amendments which we adopted, but not the third amendment. So it shows that we're about $1 million. We have reduced FY99 spending $1 million, a little over $1 million from what was authorized last year. That's the net result.
Isn't there another 400,000?
Yeah, with the new amendment.
It's closer to 1.5 million.
Yeah, so it's about 1.5 million. As I roughly calculated, not for actual, but about 1.511, I think, is what I penciled in. So we're about $1.5 million authorized spending below what we authorized last spring is the net impact. Representative Davis?
Mr. Chairman, to clarify also, that's taken into consideration the $6 million plus in belt tightening by the administration. Is that correct?
That is correct. We allowed for $16.5 million of supplemental spending in the spending plan last year, which we showed in the overall plan. This also incorporates the $6.2 million that the governor instituted for belt tightening. Obviously, we did have a number of large economic or large disasters that we did have. what our current cash flow situation is, so people get, some members would have a better understanding. Could we do that? As a, that way people would better understand where we're at. Is there any other business to come before the Finance Committee? If not, we are adjourned. Please remember to stay around to sign the bill.
Also, we had budgeted time on Friday for the supplemental in case we needed it. We're done, so Thursday and Friday could be fairly light days for the supplemental.
Yeah.
It sort of depends on.